He's got the knowledge.
Because once again, I have to come on there and talk about how right I am once again. In anything that it comes to sports.
He's got the questions.
I'm going to lose it. Are you kidding me? What are we doing here?
He's got the guests.
The 20th head coach in Fresno State history here, Matt. Is it hard to believe sometimes still the 20th head coach here in program history?
It's all moved really quickly here over the course of the last 5-6 weeks. But super excited.
Benatti is the voice for the Central Valley sports leader. Behind the Bench starts now. Brought to you by Helena Agri.
That's right. Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader here on this Friday, October 10th. Good to have you. Good to be here for a good show here today. Can't wait to dive into all the content that's going to be coming at you here on this Friday edition of Behind the Bench. 2 hours of show before we send it away and head on over to Sanger. That's right, Sanger. We're in Sanger tonight for what should be a good one between the Apaches and the Guardians of Justin Garza. Big CMAC battle in terms of positioning there for a league title. So we'll get into that. We'll get into all kinds of different stuff here on the show today. Can't wait to dive into it. We'll get into the rundown real quick, but first let's get to our sponsors here at the top of the show. Our sponsors, which of course lead it off with the Lee's Air Hotline. Lee's Air Plumbing, Heating, and Roofing sponsoring our Lee's Air Hotline, which is 559-320-1430. The way to reach our show, 559-320-1430. The way to reach our show. The Lee's Air Weather Check currently sitting on this October 10th, a nice 79 degrees. We'll get down to about 72 for our kickoff temperatures before we dip into some cooler temperatures over the weekend and into the 60s and even low 60s and some rain by early next week. Can't wait to get to it. We are here for our cooler temperatures moving forward. So getting all the way down to 62 by Tuesday of next week. So it should be a really pleasant feeling for the next few months now. I think we're officially into that really nice time period of being in California where we don't have to deal with snowy weather or anything like that that everybody else has to deal with. Anyways, big thanks to Tony D for tossing it to us in the previous hour. Tony D Show, of course, the Sportsline Bulldog Hour. Tony D, 2 to 3 p.m. on 1430 ESPN. You also have it on demand on the 1430ESPNFresno.com website, 1430ESPNFresno.com, the way to reach our show there. Also, you have the ESPN Fresno app, which is a place you can download all of our content there, listen to all of our content right at the palm of your hand on your smartphones, smart device, all of that great stuff there for you to get into it. Excited to talk about what we got to talk about today. Of course, we're reacting to last night's action. Sharks, rough one. We'll get into some football as well. We'll talk about Fresno State, which plays in a matter of hours, less than 3 hours till kickoff between the Bulldogs and the Colorado State Rams in Colorado State. We'll be diving into that. Of course, coming up in this hour, we'll have Fresno State volleyball. Lisa Rosen and some players are going to be coming in to talk to us about their season. The Fresno State women's volleyball season will be coming up there. We'll talk about some Mountain West conversation as well, some high school football. Paul Metter is going to join us right at the top of the 4 o'clock hour, as he does on these Fridays. MLB playoffs, of course, lots to digest in terms of that. What the heck happened in L.A. last night? Talk about some big game fives coming up, including tonight, which you can listen to on 790 between the Mariners and the Tigers out in Seattle. So plenty to dive into, all fixed into this two-hour program. What are we watching over the weekend as well? Can't wait to dive into it on this Friday. But first, before we dive into the topics of the show, of course, we got our wonderful people who help us work on the show and help us do the thing we do here. And a couple of producers in today. It's been different producers every day. So we had Jorge on Monday. We've had Tim Veer on Tuesday. We have had Daniel on Tuesday. We had Joe on Thursday. And now we have Sergio and Chloe in on Friday. So I feel like we're getting a different flavor every day of producers here in the studio. But it's good to have you guys here. Sergio, Chloe, how are we doing on this Friday afternoon?
Doing great. Yeah, we got to keep the producer rotation going. I'm loving all the variety, but I'm doing great. That Eagles-Giants game was not what I expected yesterday, but we can keep talking about that
certainly
later.
Chloe, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. I know I talked to you, the beginning of this week was a little rough, so I'm happy it's Friday.
Yeah.
Excited for a great Friday. I'm loving this producer rotation, but I mean, we have to know, like, who's been your favorite?
Oh,
obviously, your Friday crew, right?
Well, we'll see in 2 hours. Well, we got to make sure we deliver on the Friday content for sure. So, guys, you got to bring the heat so therefore I can pick you at the end of the show. Maybe
the challenge is on.
That's it. That's it. Anyways, we got a lot to talk about, like, at the top of the show. One thing, I'm not going to make you guys talk hockey last night, but I will say the Sharks are back to the same old Shark stuff from last night. I don't know if you guys saw the ending of the Sharks game last night. 1:50 to go in the Sharks game. They were up one with the empty net out for Vegas. Vegas was trying to score. Sharks have a breakaway for the empty net and somehow do not score. And then on the very flip side, Vegas is just trying to dump the puck into the zone. It's a flip at the midline from Jack Eichel, and it just bounces in a weird way that gets through the goalie and ties the game just like that. The Sharks have been playing so well defensively, and then they have a brain fart at the end of regulation. After that, in overtime, a puck leaks out to the blue line in their zone, and their goalie decides to come out and try to play the puck. Vegas is too forward on the pressure, deflects the puck away, guy gets behind the goalie, and it is a goal, and the Sharks lose 4-3 in heartbreaking fashion. I had to point it out. I don't know if anybody else watched that last night or listened to it on the radio in terms of it, but if you want change on this Sharks team, they can't be playing like that, so I just wanted to bring that up last night. So one of the many confounding things we've seen in sports over the last 24 hours. Felt like people lost their brains a little bit last night in terms of everything. Dodger ending, of course, that's one thing I want to get into as well, but I might save that for the next hour. So Giants and Eagles last night, I think a lot of people were shocked. I said Eagles by 3. I think it was going to be tight. I thought it was going to be close. I didn't think the Giants would absolutely dominate in that one, in that situation. But the Giants get it done. Cam Scataboo has become the sensation of the league. I don't know if you saw, he was ripping off his shirt with Ryan Fitzpatrick at the postgame in terms of it. Hey, shout out to Fitzy. You know, no shame in the hair everywhere on the torso. I feel that, man. I appreciate your representing there. Anyways, the football game last night with the New York Football Giants. It's fascinating. We talked about it yesterday with Tanvir in terms of what it'll look like for the rest of the NFC East. Are the Eagles in trouble? What did we learn from last night's game from the New York Giants beating the Philadelphia Eagles last night?
I think the Eagles offense really showed their consistency. It's either one thing or the other. It's either their pass game is like kind of working and the run game isn't, or vice versa. Last night, their run game wasn't working at all. Their pass game was great. Dallas Goedert and AJ Brown had great games, but Jalen Hurts kind of looked iffy at some points. And we learned that Jackson Dart's kind of for real. Like, he's kind of, he's rejuvenated this Giants offense along with Cam Scataboo. And Brian Daboll, I loved that clip of him freaking out over Jackson Dart being in the blue tent.
To a point where I think the NFL is investigating how much he was near the tent, which you're not supposed to be in a situation like that. It's almost like a coach pressuring in that situation. So we'll see if there's any punishment. Do you think, Chloe, do you think Brian Daboll should be punished for being how involved he was in the concussion situation last night with the game? He was very much near the proximity of the tent. You're supposed to keep it very independent in concussion determination, you know? I don't know if Daboll should get punished for that or not.
No, yeah, I feel like an investigation in that is definitely kind of serious. I mean, I got home right after the game had finished, mm-hmm. and I was kind of watching the recap and the highlights, and they could not stop talking about that and the concern, because I felt like 5-10 minutes of the post-game coverage was him being near that tent. It is supposed to be independent. So I don't know. That was a little iffy when you're not playing by the rules.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to make sure we get that figured out. And I think the NFL will take care of it. Hey, by the way, Chloe, do me a favor real quick. Can you run outside and go find our guests. I think they're locked at the gate real quick. So I want you to bring them and have them hang in the green room right now, our volleyball team and players. So let's make sure we get them in here. I think Jorge's actually might be getting them now. He heard my cry for help in terms of it. So, but they texted me they're here. So I want them to just chill and hang out. So perfect. We got that figured out right now. Appreciate it to Jorge. So anyways. No better way to do that than to just do it on air. Anyways, Sergio, your thoughts on the Brian Daboll situation? I think that's the big – that's one big story. The other big story is, are the Eagles broken? Like, is there smoke and is there fire? Because it seems like we have smoke here in terms of the Eagles, or are they too talented to let this ruin the season the way they played the last couple of weeks?
I think they have way too much talent for them to start totally panicking. I do think there needs to be some kind of change on who's calling plays or who's drawing up plays or something like that, because I don't think you could really blame the talent that they have. They have great receivers. They have Saquon Barkley. He's a phenomenal running back. And Jalen Hurts, I feel like, is he can get the job done. He's always fluctuating between elite yeah. and just below elite. So I feel like they have more than enough talent. It's just a matter of who's calling the plays at this point right now.
Certainly. So we'll see where it all comes from. I think, though, the youth of Jackson Dart and the youth of Cam Scadabo, it gives you an idea of what I think there's a certain swagger to it in terms of it. Football is about attitude sometimes, and I think maybe not necessarily they are the most pop-out talent I test-wise of certain players in that sense, but in terms of the way they – galvanize things around them. That's why people love Jameis so much in terms of it. It feels like Jameis kind of galvanizes players around him, even if he does make mistakes. I feel like Dart kind of is in the same vein, and his scramble ability creates that. And sometimes when you're looking for leaders on the football field, it's not necessarily the prototypical kind of guy like a Kirk Cousins that seems like it's so good on paper in terms of what it looks like, but it has to have the swagger to it as well, the leader of men kind of situation. And yes, the psycho bowling ball that is Cam Scadabo that can allow a team to believe in itself. So the Giants certainly feel like they can beat anybody on any given Sunday with the way they played last night. Are they a playoff team? I don't know. I think 1-4 was too big of a hole to come out of, so we'll see where it all comes out from there. But fascinating football game last night. One last thing, a little touch on before. We'll dive into it later in the show. I think we'll touch on it when it comes to our Mountain West discussion. But the Fresno State Bulldogs playing tonight, of course, the game against Colorado State. I said it yesterday. I don't see this one being any sort of close. It shouldn't be close. This is a big mismatch for Colorado State taking on the Fresno State Bulldogs, but football is football. And if that is the case, then sometimes we run into the situation of why is this game so close? Because it's on the road and it's on a short week and on a Friday. But logic tells me this shouldn't be a close game in Fort Collins. I'm trying to go into that mindset with that attitude, but I have the cautious little pessimistic person sitting right next to me that just is like, just be careful. Things could go squirrely quick. But I don't see any other way this game could go in this certain direction other than the Bulldogs' role. Sergio, what do you feel? And then we'll go to Chloe. What do you feel about tonight's game against Colorado State?
I feel good. I feel like the Bulldogs will come out with a win, hopefully easily. We said that last week when they played Nevada and they struggled mightily in the second half, but I feel like they'll learn from their mistakes. I feel like they'll come out in the second half with an even better game plan and way to, you know, close out the game in a comfortable way. So
I didn't get a chance to warn the fan base about Nevada game, by the way. I didn't get a chance to let you all know, hey, Nevada's very good at the defensive line, and what are we struggling right now is a healthy offensive line. When you have that much of a mismatch, even though on paper everything should point to Fresno State, one mismatch can derail the game for a while, and we certainly saw that with Nevada in that football game, outside of maybe losing the mojo of the stadium as well. I blamed a lot of that, too, in terms of just where the energy level was. Didn't feel great about everybody just leaving at half. But outside of that, I do think we get a starter on the line back tonight with Braden Walton. I believe we should see him be playing. So four of the five starters back now on the offensive line. Colorado State can get bullied. They gave up 300 rushing yards to San Diego State last week. So I don't see a different scenario other than a massive offensive game from the Bulldogs tonight. But Chloe, any sense around this game you feel other than it really should be business as usual for the Bulldogs?
It should be business as usual. I mean, the Bulldogs, especially with having four of those guys back, I feel like it's going to be a great night for our offense. We have Colorado. They're on the road. Yes, mm-hmm. It's a Friday night, but I honestly enjoyed Friday night games more than Saturday games. So I feel like the crowd's going to be great.
Yeah.
And that it's fun whenever you go to a game and we have a good crowd. But no, this should be easy for Fresno State.
They just worry about the travel, though. Being at Fort Collins, haven't won there since 2012, being in Colorado. We'll see what that crowd brings in terms of it. But outside of that, just efficiency. Things need to work well for this team. Donaldson, I think, is going to be the player of the game tonight. I think he gets to 200-plus. I think he has a massive game. We've been waiting for it. We've heard a lot about Speedy Luke the last few weeks. But I think Bryson's he broke out against Colorado State last year. Ironically, the Bulldogs can be bowl eligible 2 years in a row by beating Colorado State. That's very funny to me that last year they beat Colorado State to get bowl eligible and they can do it again, yet it's a week seven now. So we'll see how it all plays out. But we'll go to official predictions later in the show and all that great stuff, score predictions, all that fun stuff at the tail end of the show. But we got our guests here. They're waiting for us. Fresno State Volleyball is going to be joining us here soon. They're in the middle of their season talking about what they are going to be looking forward to with this conference play now in full swing. So Fresno State Volleyball joining me next. We're just getting started here behind the bench rolling on 1430 ESPN. Fresno the Valley's local sports leader. All right, welcome back to Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN, Fresno the Valley's local sports leader. Good to have some great guests that come into our show, and glad we got this one set up. Fresno State Volleyball, members of the volleyball team joining me, head coach Lisa Rosen, Addison Haluska as well, both joining me here in studio now to talk about the Fresno State Volleyball season. Of course, right in the middle of the busy part of the season. I appreciate you both for taking some time to come down to the studio and chat with me. Thanks for coming by.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for having us.
Yeah. Yep. Good to have you both. And, of course, when I say middle of the season, I mean we had game last night. We have game tomorrow. And so it's all in the thick of it right now. Volleyball season, it doesn't really slow down, right, Coach? Sometimes it just keeps going.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, obviously, this is the fun part because we're in season. And we're also in conference now. So this is the most fun part. But yeah, it's pretty much a year round thing, which I appreciate because we get to see the girls quite a bit. But yeah, we're right in the middle of it right now.
Yeah, certainly. Addison, when it comes to the rigors of a schedule like this and just trying to keep pace, does it feel like sometimes you gotta take a breath sometimes in these in a schedule like this, or do you just get eager for the next one sometimes?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think we definitely take advantage when we do have some time off, but I think we're all excited when the next game is coming. But yeah, every moment we have to take a break, we're taking it for sure.
Certainly. Of course, you guys are playing volleyball right now. And we'll talk about the season as a whole. But just on the side of things of that, of course, you get started with some big tournaments throughout. And the tournament season, of course, you don't really are able to simulate anything later in the season until you get to the conference tournament. So let me ask, when you try to simulate the things you see in a tournament season like preseason to then try to capture it when you get to the postseason. Coach, how do you bottle up those kind of situations from the early part of the season you've seen so far?
Well, I think the biggest thing is we're trying to figure out the combinations that work the best on the floor together. And I think that, we've talked about this before where we have a very inexperienced team. We graduated a lot from last year's program. This year's team is very inexperienced, whether it's freshmen or just new players that are taking on new roles. And so, every week I think that we have gotten better, that we've made, we've made some appropriate adjustments. We're settling into a pretty solid lineup. we'll make adjustments if need be, but I feel very confident and very good about our lineup. Now we just have to, you know, we have to play a little bit more consistent at a high level. Mm-hmm. And we're finding that high level. It's just a matter of being able to compete within that consistency standpoint for longer periods of time.
Is it consistency in set-to-set performance, or is it consistency in point-to-point? Like, where is it, or is it all umbrella in terms of that? I guess that's an easy way of answering that question.
But. Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. You know, we've talked about some stuff. We're really trying to make the game maybe a little bit smaller than what it is, and so we're talking about being the first to five, you know, and mm-hmm. breaking the game down into five-point chunks. Because I think if you look at the game as a whole, it can get a little bit intimidating or overwhelming. And so each set we're trying to look at, you know, our goal right now is to be the first to five, the first to 10, the first to 15, and so on. So those are just a little, it's just a little bit different way to look at it.
Yeah.
So I think that helps. And then obviously, you know, winning the first set and then winning the second set and then being able to finish. So just trying to make it a little bit more manageable or a little bit smaller than just thinking about, hey, let's win.
Mm-hmm. And when Coach talks about that, Addison, as a player, what reflects in your mind when Coach is talking about winning that five, winning that 10, when it comes to that, as a player, when you're out there mentally, what goes through your mind when Coach is mentioning that?
Yeah, I think that it definitely helps with the confidence of our players, like to have those small wins throughout the sets, like winning the first to five, winning the first to 10. So I think it helps with confidence and also just like not making the match so much pressure. I think that's a big thing right now. It's like handling the pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And so making it smaller and making it more manageable and something that we can achieve helps with our confidence.
Absolutely. And let's talk about, you know, just the progression of the season as you go through, right? And you go through these tournaments and you start with the Wildcat Classic, you know, start off with a five-setter, of course. Five-setters can feel like a marathon sometimes. You've got a couple five-setter wins out there on the schedule. So to lead off a game like that at the top of the schedule, of course, Coach, you mentioned you're still working through, you know, the different lineups and set, but I'll go here, Addison. First, when you win a five set like that to start things off, what does it tell you about the grittiness sometimes when you go through games like that, like maybe some of this team's done before in the postseason sometimes last year?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, that was our first match, and I think everyone was super excited to just like actually play a match that was going to count towards our record and everything. Mm-hmm. And so I think everyone, like, we started off really, really good, really confident. And even playing those five sets, like, it's a lot of good volleyball, and I think it was a good experience for our team. So
yeah,
they can be tough, but obviously we came out with a win. So
certainly, nice. Coach, 2 5-set wins. I don't want to point them out, you know, because you got other big time moments in this schedule. But to see the grind, usually it's at this point you're just like, just go out and figure it out by the fifth set in terms of it. But you know, getting that win at CSUN at home, you know, another big time matchup with that. You know, when you see the grittiness of a couple wins like that on the schedule already, what can it tell you about what you can lean into when they get in those situations later?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is we have a group that likes to compete. I think that at times the score, you know, win or a loss, it puts pressure on you.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the biggest thing that we're trying to manage and get better at right now is just handling the pressure. And what we're talking about a lot within our gym is the whole unit. So one team is greater or stronger than one individual. And so we're really trying to lean into that even if, you know, maybe I'm on the team and I'm a passer and I'm not passing great that night,
yeah,
I have teammates that will help me out. Or maybe one part of my game is great and another part is struggling. I can lean into that. At the same time, I can rely on my teammates to help me out. And so we're really trying to put that into a perspective. And I think that helps us be able to compete as a whole for a longer period of time. And that's, you know, that's what we're learning right now.
Certainly. So you're in the middle of the Mountain West schedule, of course, last night, dropping one to Air Force in 4 sets, but it was a big time battle. You come off the win on the weekend against San Jose State, or you got to go get to Nevada tomorrow. All these home games, you want to try to cash in as much as you can. How tough has been the Mountain West schedule so far? How have you seen the talent level in the Mountain West throughout so far?
Yeah, I think the nice thing about this conference is there's a ton of parity. And so, you know, any night, either team can win. And so, you know, that doesn't necessarily allow for us to be up and down. So we've got to be a little bit more flat in our performances. You know, certainly I love the highs, but if the highs are followed by lows, then we want to get better at that. But I think that just the parity across the conference, I haven't seen a team yet that no one can beat. I haven't seen a team yet that won't win. Mm-hmm. So I think that from a parity standpoint and just a competitive level, I think that that's great for our conference.
Addison, when you play night in, night out, and you see the talent that's on there, and there's always kind of like a few competitors on the other side, and you're just like, wow, there's talent. Like every team's got a couple of players like that are going to be monsters to go up against and something like that, or have the game plan in certain aspects. You know, tell me a little bit about, just as a player, the grind of, you know, you coming off the game against the Air Force and what they had, and beating San Jose State and what they had, and playing Boise and what they had. You know, what is that like as a player, and does it fuel you when you get those competitive juices going?
Yeah, I mean, personally, like whenever there's a player on another team that's like their best player, that's motivation to me. And I know a lot of our other players, like, we want to attack that person in every aspect of the game. And so I think the Mountain West does have a lot of players. Like every team has their star player. And so when we're doing scout and just everything to prepare for the game, like preparing to attack that player and how can we shut them down? And then, yeah, just get us to win.
You got another big one tomorrow in Nevada. Just real quick, I mean, what challenges do they face when you got them in your building? Is it another team that's just like, wow, there's a lot to look forward to with what we're going to be facing against Nevada?
I think Nevada has always been a very scrappy team. I think their serve-receive is something that we can take advantage of for sure. And so just going back, serving aggressive, getting them out of system, and then I think we have good attackers, good blockers, so it's just a matter of following our scout and our plan and executing at the end of the day.
Hey, Coach, like I said, you know, she mentioned some of the things that, of course, with Nevada. And as scouting, you mentioned as a coach, you know, when it comes to everything like that, you mentioned the parity, right? You mentioned all the teams that kind of can feel like they beat everybody in a certain way if you catch them on a good night, you know. As a coach, do you love the challenge just like the players love the challenge of, like, what they face? Do you love the challenge of what these coaches bring to sometimes when you scout these teams?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the biggest thing with – and I'm much more focused on our team and how our team is performing. It doesn't mean that I'm not – you know, I'm very involved and I'm very knowledgeable about our scout, and I think we do a really good job with that. But right now, my main focus is trying to get our players to play at the highest level that they possibly can for the longest amount possible. I think it's like, and we've talked about this a lot, I think that the season is a lot like putting a puzzle together, you know, and I think we have some really, like, I think we have the border, like we have the outside edges of our puzzle built, like we've got some key players, and I think that's been established, and now we just need to tweak and figure out what are the inside, like how do we fit those middle pieces in so that we build this puzzle in the right way.
Yeah. And teams are building puzzles against you guys. And, of course, they have to build a puzzle against this player right here, Addison, who's Absolutely. Having a great season so far. You know, big-time leading point getter for the Bulldogs right now, leading kills as well on the team. You know, she'll be modest, so I'll have you talk about Addison in a way. What stands out about what she's been this season for you so far?
Well, I think Addie's role has evolved ever since we've gotten here. It's evolved and it's taken on more and more responsibility. You know, the first year that we got here, Addie was just really a ball banger. You know, she just got up and got kills for us. And it was pretty much a front row only. You know, last year we added in the back row aspect of that. And she's been really, really good at adapting to that. Now this year, you know, she's front row, back row. We use her as a go-to player for sure. Mm-hmm. But then now there's a leadership component to that, you know, and she has to, you know, the reality is she's a leader for us. She's a captain for us. So she can't really afford to have bad nights. And so being able to figure out how does she prepare every night, not necessarily to have a career night, but she's got to have a great night. You know, if she struggles, then we're going to struggle. And just learning how to perform under that type of pressure, because that's new. You know, last year it wasn't necessarily that same thing. If she had a great night last year, great. But now this year, we need her to. You know, we're relying on her for that. Mm-hmm.
And when you hear that from Coach and knowing the reliance is on there for you in that role, was it a lot of talking with yourself in terms of taking on that responsibility, knowing that it's progressed from just being a front row, kind of like she said, ball banger in a way, to where you are now, where you have that versatility and that responsibility as a leader who's been in this program for a long time now? What makes you prepared for that role for you this season?
Yeah, I think my first couple years, like, I had a hard time handling the pressure, and I think, like, I've just gotten a lot better at handling the pressure and finding ways to cope with it, whether that's, like, relying on my teammates or whatever it is. But I feel like it's all about confidence, and, like, fake it till you make it. You're not having the best night. Like, find another way to give to your teammates, and, like, that's kind of what I've been focusing on a lot this year, and obviously it's been paying off. And kind of my mentality is just like, what can I do that's going to help this team improve this season and, like, or even win the game, is like, give us the best possibility of winning that set, whether that's like being loud on the court or if that's attacking the ball or making the ball better, keeping it in play, like just finding something I can do to head us in the right direction.
You felt the victory, right, a couple of years ago in the tournament, and you know what that tastes like, and you know what that takes in terms of it. How much do you go to that feeling and knowing what that took for a team to get to that level, and how much you're trying to draw that out of some of the teammates that haven't been there and haven't tasted that before from your perspective?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, that was, like, one of the best experiences I've ever had, and I think that the team now, like, we are young, and it's just they have a lot of other things I feel like that they're improving on, and so that might not be, like, the number one goal right now, but I think that as much as I can do to, like, motivate people, and just it's honestly just about, like, giving them the knowledge of how to be a college athlete and, like, mm-hmm. what you need to do and all the little things you need to worry about that will get you to that point. But it was definitely, like, one of the greatest experiences I ever had, and
yeah,
it was a great team as well. So I think that this team definitely has the potential to get there.
Let's talk about some teammates too. You've got another big time attacker on the other side, like Jenna, right? And how is the duo of you two been able to find success, and what has it been like being her teammate and seeing what she's been doing kind of fall in your lead in a way in terms of the way that she's been able to become a primary attacker for you?
Yeah, I think me and Jenna came in together, and we, like, have had so many changes happen through our 4 years together. And so I think our relationship has gotten stronger and better. And I think we relate a lot to each other now, being two of the older people on the team. Mm-hmm. And we know what it takes. We know what it feels like to win. We know what it feels like to lose. And so I think that we've been able to, like, rely on each other a lot more, give each other advice, and then just bounce back and forth and do whatever we can to help the team. But, yeah, she's been having a great season, and so it's nice to have her as well on the team.
It takes pressure off when you have another player like that with Jenna. You got all kinds of great players on the team, but when Jenna comes in, and obviously she's doing with what she's doing with Addison, second leading kill leader on the team, and what she can provide, is there differences to their game? Like, what's describe to me maybe the differences you approach with the two attackers that you have on this team right now.
Yeah, I think the one thing that I'm really impressed with both of them is their game has grown exponentially. You mm-hmm. know, Jenna's in our serve receive, and so she's a six rotation outside hitter. So she's taking a lot of, you know, she has a lot of first contact responsibility, and then also a lot of third contact responsibility. So her game has grown a ton, just as Addie's has, as far as just taking on more and more responsibilities. You know, everybody looks at the third contact or the kill as the most impressive, which it is, but they all look at it also as the most important, and it is important, but we've got to have that first contact be a consistent contact. And I think that Jenna's getting significantly better with that. We've actually brought Addie into our serve receive as well. And so, you know, just more and more responsibilities. I think the one thing that I'm really, really impressed with both of them is they know how to take care of their bodies. They know how to use their time wisely, and they know how they know how to prepare to come into practice and matches at a very high level. So the fact that they're trying to instill that in a bunch of freshmen, that again, this is their first year doing that, I think mm-hmm. that's a huge responsibility and something that they're doing really extraordinarily well as captains.
You mentioned obviously the youthful nature of this team, and one of the players I think that's taking on the big responsibility is Gabby Lombardi. I want to talk about her real quick and what her progression has been. Who's redshirted last year, and now she's in a big spot, obviously playing the center position. Coach, first of all, you know what gave you the confidence to see what she had in terms of what she can provide, and then how has she really stepped into the role so far this season?
Well, I think the biggest thing is when we were recruiting her and when we brought her in, we thought that there was great potential. And she actually doesn't enjoy hearing that she has potential because she wants to realize it. And I think that she is. Yeah. Absolutely. I don't think it ever comes as fast as what anybody wants it to. But I had a very interesting conversation with her this past week. And she said that, you know, I always ask them, what do they need to work on, or, you know, what's going well? And she said that her setting, she doesn't have to necessarily think about that anymore. The tactics or the technique, because we were mm-hmm. working on some technique stuff with her. She doesn't really have to think about that anymore. And that's a really good thing. Like, that's a very good base foundation for her. Now she can, you know, focus on blocking, or she can focus on defense. So the main thing that we need her to do is run our offense. And that's becoming much more natural and much more just second nature to her, which allows our offense to run more yeah. smoothly, which is the goal for a setter. So that was really positive. I'm really glad that that's a realization that she had. We could know it, but if she doesn't realize it, it doesn't yeah. do any good.
And then just the relationship between you, Addison, as one of the primary tackers, and what Gabby's providing, you know, it's like wide receiver, quarterback in a way. It's all, you know, pitcher, catcher in a way, you know. Describe the relationship sometimes you have to have with a player like this, like Gabby is, and her stepping into this big role for the first time since she's really played since high school in a way. Tell me about that relationship.
Yeah, I think I had the same setter for the last 3 years, so it was kind of a big change for both of us, but it takes a lot of communication on the court and after the play, so I think we've been communicating a lot. And just trying to help each other, I think, is a big thing too. Mm-hmm. Like, neither of us expect each other to be perfect. So whatever we can do to help each other, and then slowly just build that relationship on the court. But I think it's improved a lot since we started back in the spring. So
it's exciting, of course. And this team has the capabilities of doing what you hope to do, of course, is getting that postseason and winning another trophy. Of course, it's not how you start, it's how you finish. And so, Coach, I ask this as my last question before we let you go. You know, how do you see this team progressing now as you try to get them on the upward trajectory to that postseason level? What are the next weeks about for this team for you in your mind?
I think the biggest thing is, and we've talked about this numerous times, is we're playing better volleyball. Every time we step on the floor, we play better volleyball. Now we have to put it together as an entire group for a longer period of time. But I really love the intentionality of what everybody's approaching practices with, and then also matches. So I think the biggest thing that we need to do now is to allow them to play freely, but playing also disciplined with what we have been working on. You know, we're talking a lot about, you know, do what you say you're going to do, whether it's an attacking route or a passing seam responsibility, or maybe it's a scout report. You know, we're taking this certain shot away. Do what you say you're going to do, and then everybody can everything falls into place after that. But we're certainly not looking for perfect play. We're looking for progressions, and that's a big thing. You know, I think everybody wants to be perfect, and just perfect isn't realistic.
It'll be perfect if you win it all in Vegas at the end of November. We can't wait to see how this team transforms through the next couple of months. Appreciate you both for coming into the studio, talking volleyball. You can watch them tomorrow at Save Mart Center, 1 o'clock. Hey, there's nothing better to do than a 1 o'clock game on a Saturday down at the Save Mart Center. So there's something to do for the folks at home. Lisa, appreciate it. Addison, appreciate it. Thanks for coming in. Good luck tomorrow against Nevada.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Yep, absolutely. Fresno State Volleyball in here now. We'll take a break. We'll end the hour here next on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. All right, welcome back to Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. Big thank you to Lisa Rosen and Addison Haluska from Fresno State Volleyball for joining us in the last break. Of course, Fresno State plays tomorrow at home, 1 o'clock. You got nothing else to do. 1 o'clock at St. Mart Center. Go watch a volleyball game as Fresno State takes on Nevada. No Fresno State football. Come on, folks. Good Saturday plans for you there. Good thing to do. I'd like to remind Chloe that yes, Fresno State beat San Jose State 3-0. In volleyball.
Okay, we don't need to rub it in.
I didn't realize I was rubbing it in until you were.
I give them props. I will give them props. We don't need to rub it in. You did bring it up right now on air.
Well, I didn't realize it was like a stab at you until I realized you pointed it out, and then I was like, oh,
because okay. I'm friends with. Jose State volleyball. My friends play for them.
Speaking of, let's do a little run around with the Mountain West scoreboard, and we'll call this the Daily Spread, brought to you by Chukchansey Gold Resort and Casino. Daily Spread, brought to you by Chukchansey. If you're not trying your luck with your teams, try your luck with Chukchansey Gold Resort and Casino. Let's do the Daily Spread, run through some of the Mountain West games, which now I think we're officially in the conference play for everybody. So Fresno State, Colorado State, 6.5, the line there. I think this has to be way higher. I think this should be 10 at least for me. Too high, too low. 6.5 for the Fresno State Bulldogs against Colorado State tonight. What do you guys feel?
I think the books are scared because of what happened last week with the Nevada game. Yeah. But I feel like this one for sure, Fresno State should hit the over on this one.
Okay. What about you, Chloe?
I have to agree. Fresno should hit the over on this one.
UNLV Air Force tomorrow, 12:30. It's at Vegas. The Air Force Falcons cannot play defense to save their lives. 64.5 is the total. UNLV is a 6.5-point favorite. I'm inclined to say, yeah, they'll win by a touchdown. Not very much further than that. I agree with the total. Yeah, I think I'll go UNLV. I think that's a little higher. Or that should be right. I think it feels right, UNLV and Air Force. Or Air Force at UNLV.
Yeah, that one feels right too. Definitely, I feel like they'll win by more than just one score, but you know, we'll see.
I'll give it to UNLV, but I give it a touchdown too, maybe a field goal.
Okay. San Jose State at Wyoming, 1.5-point favorite. San Jose State on the road. I don't have a great feel for it between these two teams, but I've seen Wyoming play more, and I just don't know if they have anything on offense to offer. So, yeah, I'll go with Egitt and the San Jose Spartans there. I think it could be a 3-point game, so I feel like that's somewhat just right on the line, and I would go San Jose State.
Yeah, I think San Jose State can easily cover this. Wyoming has not played very inspiring football as of late, and San Jose State's played some of their – they won last week. They played Stanford really closely, so give me San Jose State. Okay. They'll win by 5.
Spartans, baby. I'm obviously going to take San Jose on this. Again, the win last week, and, yeah, we did lose to Stanford, but that was a close game. Wyoming doesn't personally have much to offer, so, of course, I'm going to take it to San Jose.
Boise is hosting New Mexico. Boise, 15.5-point favorite. New Mexico did lose to San Jose last week. I don't know if 15.5 is too – I think it's too high for me. I think Boise is kind of that mid-tier level team right now. So I'd say that's a 14-point margin. I'd say it's a little too high for me in the spread. I think Boise does win, though, but I think it's a little too high.
Yeah, this is definitely way too high. I know Boise's at home, but New Mexico is no slouch. I feel like 8.5 would make more sense in favor of Boise, but yes, this feels way too high for this one.
Okay.
This is really high. I'm going to give it to Boise, but maybe by a two-point lead.
All right, we got 1 minute left, so let's go quick. Just real quick thoughts. San Diego State, Nevada. I think Nevada could win this. San Diego State 7.5, so I'm going to go Nevada. I think that spread's too high for San Diego State.
Hammer the Nevada spread.
Yes.
Nevada.
Utah State at Hawaii. Utah State 1.5-point favorite. I think Utah State's been playing really feisty on the road, so I'm going to go Utah State. I think they can beat Hawaii.
The Hawaii time difference is always too much for teams. Give me Hawaii to cover.
Utah State feels pretty safe on this one.
Okay. By the way, I think back to the Nevada game real quick. I think they did find something in that freshman quarterback that they brought in the second half against Fresno State. I don't think he is a slouch at all. I think he's actually a really good talent, and I think they could get a boost from him this week in terms of it. So I could definitely see them beating San Diego State by the last point on there. So, all right, when we take a break, we'll come back and start the next hour. Palmetto is going to join us. We're going to talk Friday Night Lights, get prepped for this game tonight, and many more. Stay with us. Behind the Bench rolls along on 1430 ESPN. That's right. Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. Hour number two of our show as we wrap up at 5 o'clock, and then we will be zipping over to Sanger for Sanger and Justin Garza tonight on Friday Night Lights. Yours truly and Paul Metters will be on the call tonight on 1430. Of course, over on 790 tonight, we'll have Mariners and Tigers Game 5 ALCS from Seattle. That'll be over on 790 starting at 4:30. So pregame there, 5:08, first pitch from Seattle. Joe Gomez will be, quaking in his boots tonight. But a man who will not be quaking his boots for a little bit for playoff baseball, his Dodgers advanced in one of the craziest plays I've ever seen in a series. Paul Metters is here to join me now. Paul, how are we doing on this Friday? It's been a whirlwind of emotions for you.
The last 36 hours of my life have been absolutely nuts. I ran this huge league tournament at my school. 6 schools, 22 teams, 18 games. It was absolutely nuts. So yeah, I got to listen to the Dodger game driving home, got home at the bottom of the 9th. So I saw the rest of the Dodgers game. And I like when that play happened, I didn't jump up for joy that the Dodgers won. It was more like, oh my gosh, the Phillies lost on that play. And I genuinely did feel bad for him. Yeah. I'll be honest. I did, because what a horrible way to lose a game. Not a great way to win a game, but they won a game.
Dodgers not only to lose the game, lose the series, end of season.
End of season.
That's it.
That's rough. That is rough. And
I'm trying to think of like boneheaded gaffe kind of ending series, like Buckner. Like, I don't know if it'll go caliber and Buckner, but it's as rough of a play as some guy will commit in terms of in a situation like
that. Yeah, just because you feel like it was, he just got caught in the moment, got caught in too much pressure. And, hey, I got to give a lot of credit to Philly's manager and players that consoled him, right? Manager met him at the top of the dugout, consoled him. And then he took questions. He took it like a man, and he said, hey, I got to be honest, I panicked.
Yep.
He panicked. And that's a play that you see in high school a lot, right? The panic play, if a ball goes off a pitcher.
Where do you go?
You can't time it right. You're like, hey, my internal clock is really, really sped up. So, gosh, I mean, grace should abound, but not in Philadelphia. God, I can't imagine what the airwaves are saying about that game.
They have plenty of people to roast in terms of that in Philadelphia after that, and the Giants-Eagles game after that too. So
right?
Even the Flyers lost last night to add insult to injury. So Philadelphia not having a great Friday for them. But let's talk about some teams who are maybe feeling good on this Friday already, and then we'll dive into our Friday night game, which, of course, we'll talk about Sanger and Garza. But first, some scores last night to react to in terms of high school level. Excited to – I was out last week. I was on vacation. Appreciate you, first of all, for taking over the play calling duties with Pat Hill. That was a lot of fun.
That was awesome.
I was at Galaxy's Edge, and I even – tuned in just a little bit, just to hear a little bit of what the drama was.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And right. And, you know, Pat Hill knows more about football in his little pinky than I will ever know in my entire life. So I was just happy to keep up with him. And Pat he's amazing, right? He's a genuine deal. So that was a lot of fun.
Coaches, I'm sure, doing great out there in Colorado tonight. But we'll pull up the slack for him here. And, of course, let's talk about some results last night. There was a big game that popped my eye. Of course, the record standing 6-0 versus 6-0 last night. McLean and Roosevelt surely looked like kind of for the league, per se. And The Highlanders, man, they are rolling again this season. I don't know if you saw, they've only given up 17 points through seven games this year on their schedule. They seem like they're poised to win the league after beating Roosevelt last night 42-0. What stood out from that result in your mind?
The 42-0. And, you know, last year's game had a lot of stuff to it. Let's just say that, right? We could just say bad blood, right? Between both teams last year. Really looking forward to that rematch. Rick and McCoy is doing a fantastic job at Roosevelt. Was lucky enough to talk to him last week. Great guy, man. Great things are going to be happening with that program. You know, checking Max Preps, you 14-0. Okay, McLean, big lead. Then you see the 21, and it just kept creeping up. And then checked out the finals, 42-0. I saw some highlights. Gabe Camarino did a good job from Fox 26 of tweeting those highlights out. There were some phenomenal plays in that game. I don't know if you caught some of those catches in the end zone. Guys, they looked like a really good football team. Coach Pancotti, he's got that team rolling. I do wish that their non-league schedule was a little bit tougher, right? Yeah. The strength of schedule is really, really horrible, but they look like a team that will probably go 10-0 in the regular season. I know last year they did not feel good about their loss to Emmanuel in the Division IV playoffs. And Pancotti even mentioned that. He's like, we weren't ready for the physicality of that team. And that's one of the great things about playoffs, right? You get that style of the NYL, Fresno Unified schools, and then you match it up with maybe a rural school that has some big guys and run the football and 8-minute drives, right? You know, I don't think McLean has had any 8-minute drives this season against them or on their offensive side. So, you know, I think this team's going to go 10-0, and they got their eyes on a Central Section Championship.
We'll see where they rank in terms of and where they go.
You got some stats, though, Phil.
Yeah.
Throw out those stats.
Vernon Lacey, quarterback. Gosh. I just got texted this from Coach Pancotti earlier today. About 30 touchdowns, no INTs from the quarterback. I don't care what level you are. If you're 30-0 in terms of tight ends to interception ratio, that's good. That's good.
I think that's leading the state and leading the nation. It has to be.
Yeah.
I know that's kind of a joke. I mean, sarcastic there. But, God, 30-0?
30-0 for the season. 296 last night, 5 TDs. Demetrius Simon, a big 62-yard tutty. Demarie Banks, I think was a name we called last year. He had 54-yard touchdown as well. So the boys are humming. The boys are humming down at McLean. Dinuba. How about Dinuba last night? Big win on the road. Dinuba's been I call them dangerous. You never know what you're going to get with this Dinuba squad. They get up to 4-3 now after beating Tulare Western. Big league win, 36-29. And you look at the Emperors and where they stand potentially. 1-1 in the West Yosemite after their loss to
Hanford,
right? But it just seems like this West Yosemite is going to be mixing it up a little bit here in this league. And so Dinuba with a big upset.
There's a lot of good teams in that league. And right, Dinuba, the 0-2 start, though they play Golden West and Sanger in their first two games and got that really nice win against Kingsburg. And I think that gave the Emperors a lot of confidence. They, you know, they gave up 73 points to Hanford in that week one. That's in league. It's a really tough team to play and tough team to stop. So I don't know, man. Unfortunately, I got to double check, but I think Dinuba's a base D2.
Yeah.
Right, which doesn't make sense to me. So that's going to be tough to win a couple football games in that division. But Coach CJ Lester is doing a good job.
And one more notable result, Granite Hill out of Porterville, 6-1. They just beat Orosi last night out of their league, East Sequoia. So Granite Hill's, you know, sneaky 4-0 in their league in terms of it as well. My computer just froze. So I don't know if you got some game. Well, let's talk about Sanger and Garza tonight as we lead into it. And we'll see if I can unfreeze my computer. Two teams, both 1-0 in league play. We've kind of felt like Sanger's really dominated the CMAC over the last few years, right, in terms of it. But this year feels wide open with everything that's turned into. This feels like a real opportunity for Garza tonight, who has had a really solid season. They've had some results in terms of it as well. I find this game very fascinating tonight, Paul, the one we're calling tonight on Friday. You know, people claim we give too much love to the track, but I think this is going to be a really fun CMAC game tonight.
I'm excited. First of all, Chuck Wagon, Chili Dogs, anyone,
ready.
Right?
I'm going
to be entering the stadium, sneaking in my backpack there for us to chow on. You know, you talk to coaches before the season, you know, what's the feel of the CMAC, and they still say, It runs through Sanger, right? Until somebody knocks off Sanger, Sanger's the favorite. You know, they struggled against Bullard, only won 13-7. Their top player is out for the season. That's Caden McGrew, one of the McGrew brothers. We know all about Sanger, what they do, what they try to do on offense. They're going to come at you hard with different types of formation, a double tight format, double wing T. Try to get those 7 to 8 minute drives. They'll go for it on fourth and short pretty much every time, even in their own field. I have a feeling though, Phil, right, that Justin Garza is going to win this football game. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that. I think a lot of pieces are there. Coach Ferris in his fourth year. They're a more balanced team. So ran a few stats. So they've rushed the ball 151 times and passed the ball 130 times. They got a really capable quarterback, a dual threat guy by the name of Bowden Smith. He's only thrown 9 touchdowns on the year, but he's rushed for 4. So kind of a ball controlled offense, but he's a threat to throw and run. And then on the flip side, Sanger, 220 rushing yards per game, which is, right, this is kind of what you expect from Sanger. They've only thrown the ball 59 times.
All season, really?
All season.
Wow.
All season. So we're going to see, you know, a lot of the ground and pound style offense from Sanger. On the flip side, you're going to see more of a dual threat, you know, can't catch them, you know, try to catch them playing deep, you know, run the football, and if they're playing press coverage, try to throw over the
top.
Could
be a quick game tonight, Paul.
It might be. And it's a 7:30 kick, yeah, right? So it's going to be a late one for us. So it might be a quick game on the field.
Let me point something out from Justin Garza's standpoint. The last 4 weeks, they have had games determined by 4 points or less the last 4 weeks. They had a 2-point win at Kerman. They had a 4-point loss home against Washington Union. They beat Lompoc by 3. They beat Memorial by 3 after a bye. I think the Kerman win is obviously one that stands out of all of the results so far. But, you know, Garza is a young program, right? How long has Garza been a varsity program?
Yeah, fourth year. This is the fourth year. Yeah, Ferris is the one and only coach.
This feels like as good of an opportunity for Justin Garza to kind of announce themselves as a team that can – be a power in the CMAC per se, and what their progression is, and you know, being in Central Unified, they get overshadowed by Central East and what that school looks like. But I think Garza is an interesting team of if you want to progress that program, this is a defining win tonight and where it can move moving forward.
100%. And Garza's played in some playoff games, won a playoff game. They played Kerman really tight the last 3 times. I could say this. This is probably the most important football game in Justin Garza history so far, right?
Wow.
What happened last year with that, you know, playing Central, which was a stupid idea. But if they could win this game, go 2-0 in the CMAC, you know, like I said, CMAC runs through Sanger, knock off mm-hmm. Sanger in week 2. You know, I'm not saying it's any easier. I know Madera is probably thinking, what about us, right?
Hey,
talk about us. And they got a really good football team this year. So, huge game for Justin Garza tonight. And Sanger, they got to protect their home turf.
Well, let's go through other games tonight. And why don't we stay in CMAC? Because we got Bullard at Madera. And you mentioned Madera, which we have read the statistics out of this Madera squad. There's some really good stuff coming out of this team. We haven't seen them in the eye test per se, but feels like a game they can handle with Bullard tonight. Bullard's been a little hobbled, but what do you look out of this Bullard-Madera game? It's not necessarily the Bullard-Madera games, I think, of the past we've seen so far, but.
Madera, the homeless home team, right? The stadium's being renovated probably for another full calendar year. So I all eyes and as far as my opinion on Madera in the sense of that freshman running back, mm-hmm. right? This guy is a dude. And Coach Palinelli texts me, you know, I'm like, how'd the freshman do? He's like, oh, ho-hum, another 23 carries for 240 and, you know, 2 more touchdowns. So if you could stop that guy, I think you give yourselves a chance. But, you know, I mean, that Bullard and Sanger score last week, right, that was 7-7 for a long time. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think Madera, you know, last year's loss in the championship game to Kerman. Bullard, you know, this would be a huge, huge win for Bullard. You mentioned a little bit of injury struggles here and there. They just haven't quite put together a full 4 quarters of their best football yet this year.
Let's dissect some other games as well. Let's go to the track. Let's do it. And I think the marquee, I think the marquee matchup tonight is Central East and Clovis East. And obviously that was for the Trek, that was for the 1AA championship rematch from a year ago. Clearly, I think the cast is much different than a year ago in terms of it. But I talked to Tanvir about this yesterday, and something tells me that I think Clovis East kind of matches up okay against Central East in terms of if anybody can contain Brandon Smith, if they are the best front seven that Tanvir was telling me about in Clovis East, there is a possibility they could get Central East off schedule. Now, of course, the passing game could be on point and then it's all said and done. But if there is a team in the track that I think, even despite what the record and what they show, you know, they handle Grant pretty okay. And I could be convinced tonight that Clovis East has a shot against Central East tonight.
You know, a thought, Phil, that we haven't talked too much about is the track knows the track. Meaning, right, mm-hmm. again, that Central and Grant game, I think it was just a really bad scenario for Central East. And then you see what Clovis East was able to do, hold them. I think the familiarity of the track really plays well for Central East tonight.
Yeah.
You know, if Brandon Smith, let's say they're stacking the box, is Clovis East. Brandon Smith, you know, is maybe he gets 15 carries for 80 yards. But then what are they going to do? You know, throw over the top. They're going to throw the short passes. Bayon Harris.
Yeah.
I saw his highlights last week. I mean, the dude looking amazing. So I think the ability to have that, you know, that balanced type offense, and Coach Kyle Biggs, you know, we've seen him, he'll call audibles, right? He'll see what the defense gives him, go look over, boom, 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 change it up. All of a sudden, an 8 yard out turns into a 50 yard gain. So those types of things Central East can do to Clovis East. On the flip side, to me, Clovis East is extremely one dimensional. We saw that with the quarterback, right? Number 17, Jamie Spurgeon. He's a dude, right?
Yep.
He's a really
three-star rating. I think he just got on 24/7. So.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good for him. And well-deserved. He's a load. He's got the big body. He could run the football. A lot of quarterback draws in that game last week that we broadcasted. His arm is good, but as far as a wide receiver core compared to last year, right? We had Harold Duvall. Obviously, Ty Miller was our quarterback.
Yeah.
But it's just a different style offense. Yeah, I Central East, I think, is going to put up a decent amount of points. And that Central East defense last week looked really, really good as well.
Clovis and Clovis North tonight. Clovis North got punched in the mouth pretty good to Central East last week and got their first loss. Deegan Rose is playing quarterback for the first time since being announced he is a Fresno State Bulldog commit. What a fascinating storylines going into this one tonight. What do you look forward to hearing from this one for Clovis and Clovis North?
We sometimes, Phil, you wonder if a commitment is going to weigh down a kid, right? Like, you still got all these schools chasing them.
Yeah.
All right, where are you going to go? Where are you going to? And I figured that Deegan was going to decommit from Oregon State.
Yeah.
Right? We saw the writing on the wall many different ways. And then he, you know, comes out and commits to Fresno State. So was I excited about the announcement? Absolutely. Did I think it was going to happen? Yeah, I kind of did, right? So I think Deegan's going to play loose. I think he's going to, you know what? You talk about the kid from McLean not throwing an interception all year. Deegan Rose has not thrown an interception all year as well. So he's improved a lot. I think the Cougars, man, I think they're looking good. We're pointing to that week track game four between
Central
East.
Couple weeks from now. Central East and Clovis.
Can't wait for that game.
Should be for the track, potentially. But we'll see.
How is Clovis North going to respond?
That's the question.
After what happened on that Thursday against Central East. That's a big, big question as well.
I got some other, you know, when you look at a fight title card and you see all the big time matchups, there's a lot of good undercard matchups on the Central Valley tonight. I'll give you a quick hits on some few of them here tonight. Hanford Tulare Union.
Woo!
That was advertised as a barn burner last year. We had a pretty decent showing in our game last year. Hanford was able to handle them in terms of it, but this feels like a different kind of Tulare Union team going up against Hanford. What do you expect on that one?
What do you want to set the over under at, Phil?
90.
Let's set it at 100.5.
Yeah.
Let's do it. Let's get crazy. So yeah, there's going to be a lot of points tonight. lot of fireworks on the field, both just potent offenses. You know, you talk about McLean and those 55-yard, 65-yard touchdown passes. I think we're going to see a lot of those. So that's a huge one down in the South Valley. We're going to be checking that one all night.
How about 5-1 Kerman at 5-1 Reedley? Reedley's been quiet since they lost to – they've quietly gotten to 5-1 since they lost to Orosi. But they got a good quarterback in Will Bacon. Kerman, who we're going to see next week. It's going to be an interesting one there down in Reedley.
I agree. Yeah, and I mean, you got to favor Kerman in this one, but you know, there's something about Reedley. Mm-hmm. They come away with some of these crazy wins. Will Bacon is a very capable runner at quarterback. So I think Kerman's in line to win that one, but you never know about Reedley.
We don't get very often 6-0 versus 6-0. I want to shout it out. I don't know how much intel you got on this one, but how about the Minarets Mustangs taking on Liberty out of Madera? Ethan Dunn, who was a former student athlete of the week for us this year, the Liberty, the Hawks, right?
Yeah.
They've been playing very good football, one of the best seasons they've had so far. 6-0 versus 6-0, that could be all the marbles in that league, but I can't wait to see that one.
Hey, Goff, Phil, you're just announcing all these great games tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great slate of football. Minarets had that great season last year. They were the top seed, and they got upset. I don't think it was the semifinals. I think it was the quarterfinals. So yeah. I think that, Minarets has a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. They returned their quarterback from last year. He's really good. He's actually a Buchanan transfer. And Liberty, you had Coach Nolte on your show. That's been about a month.
Yeah, about a month ago. And Ethan Dunn, who's a transfer from Louisiana, the state of Louisiana.
I didn't know that.
He's a kid from the Bayou. So he's been making his mark here in Madera playing running back.
Where is that game at?
At Liberty.
It's at Liberty.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, that's gonna be a great
keep
football
an eye game on the Hawks. They got some good mojo going. Ethan Dunn's got I think his brother used to play professionally, I think, in some pro ball. He's a little bit older, so I got to look that up, or at least he played at the D1 level. One last one, I think. Golden West and Porterville tonight in Porterville. Golden West, that 6-0 perfect record. Quietly, Golden West is continuing to roll along as well. That should be a big one.
How good is what's Porterville's record?
4-2. Okay. 4-2 Porterville tonight. Why don't I just give some more? Delano Shafter.
All right, really quick. Let me stop on that one. So, and we talked about Kerman. Coach Gerald Perucci's coming on my show tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock.
Okay.
Hey, that league is the Southwest Sequoia League.
Yeah.
Right? That's the league. So they got Wasco, Kennedy.
Wasco Kennedy tonight, by the way.
Wasco Kennedy and Delano Shafter. So four really good football teams. And then at 11:30, Coach Damon Jenkins for Kerman's coming on. So, yeah, good stuff.
Menachie at Redwood tonight. Menachie 5-1.
Sneaky
Redwood.
Good.
Sneaky good as well. Liberty Frontier. Could you imagine Liberty falling to 1-6 tonight?
Well, that matchup's tonight.
Yeah, Frontier at Liberty. Bakersfield tonight's as well. Three wins combined between those two teams going, and I don't know if anybody would have had that. But
I have no idea what to expect either. Nothing would surprise me in that game.
And finally, Clovis West at Buchanan. We'll see what the Bears can put up against that Clovis West squad that found something in that second half against Clovis East. Paul, all right, we got to let you roll. But before I let you roll, Fresno State kicks off in about an hour and 35 minutes or so from now. I know last week was frustrating. I kind of called out the fans on air. I said it was a lackluster effort from the fans. Everyone left at half thinking 20-3 was good enough. So I was a little irritated, but I'm much more tempered now in my thoughts. But I don't know if you had any thoughts about the squad or how last week went and what you expect tonight.
Well, Phil, I think you know where I stand with the Wave.
Yes. Your eternal
ever
battle
since
with
that,
the Wave.
And I'm, you know, I'm not a cusser, but I could have used a bad word there. Ever since that Wave came into Valley Children's Stadium, the Bulldogs just stymied.
Mm-hmm.
They were stymied on offense. So, yeah, a little bit frustrating to watch. And, you know, I'm staying to the end. I'm, you know,
of course.
I'm a gamer. I paid for my season tickets. I'm going to watch the whole game. But 6.5-point spread, you said? We got to go over that, right? I think I wouldn't even say this is a quote-unquote trap game at all. I think this team is going to be pretty focused. They're going to come out running the ball, right? Punch them in the mouth early, take control of the football game, and win by two touchdowns.
I think Bryson Donaldson gets 200 tonight. I think that is my bold prediction of the night. 200 for Bryson Donnell. He ran well against Colorado State last year, so why not? And by the way, the Bulldogs, bowl eligible when they beat Colorado State last year. They can be bowl eligible beating Colorado State this year. So they'll look to win at Colorado State for the first time since I was in my teens.
Really?
That's how long ago it was. So anyways, all right, Paul, we'll see you at Sanger. Pick me up a chili dog if you can. I'll meet you at the stadium.
I got you. Chuck wagon, here I come.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it'll be great.
Sneaking in my backpack.
Paul Leffler told me I need to grab a little tri-tip out there as well.
At the Tom Flores Stadium.
I've been told the tri-tip's worth it. So we may have to do a little sampling before the game.
Well, we got
to
get there early. Let's go.
I know. We got to get rolling. All right, Paul. We'll see you there. Red's the color tonight. Red's the color. Okay. So we'll see you tonight. Kickoff at 7:30, pregame at 7. Paul Metters will be seeing there. All right. Take a break. We'll come back. More to the show next on 1430 ESPN. All right, welcome back to Behind the Bench here at 1430 ESPN, Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. Honestly, Paul and I could go for a long time on the show, but we only have a certain amount of commercials we got to run here, and I just broke my pen for the second time in this show. I got to stop slamming it on the desk. I got to stop doing that. Anyways, thanks to Paul Metters for joining me in the last segment. We'll see him over there for Friday Night Lights on 1430. All right, so we touched on the beginning of that hour. I wanted to touch on some baseball talk as well because the Dodgers, with a massive win last night. The psychology of that win last night, right? It's so strange. I was trying to think of, like, massive mistakes that would end up winning series or winning, you know, getting teams into a certain situation. Did the Dodgers feel validated with a win last night like that, or did it feel like Philly gave it to them in a way? I wonder, do we feel like the Dodgers were the better team in that series? Because I think I end up in that situation. I think I do end up saying, okay, I think the team that was supposed to win did win. It's not like we had some fluky thing happen and the wrong team won this series. The Dodgers played better.
Yeah, they definitely proved they were the better team through those first two games. That's why they went up 2-0.
Mm-hmm.
Game three, they did not play great. And then this game, yesterday's game, their pitching was phenomenal. So I feel like it is such a weird way to win, but also you put the Phillies in that position to even have the bases loaded in the first place. Yeah. So I feel like the Dodgers should feel like they earned this win, even though it pains me to say it.
There's a situation in that game, and we can go really inside baseball breakdown here for it, but, like, I thought the Phillies really lost the game in this. I think it was the seventh inning, and it was a scenario second and third, and they had Ohtani up with two out, and they intentionally walk Ohtani.
Yeah.
And then they walk, and then they go to ball four with Mookie and don't attack Ohtani, who's won for, what, 13 in the series at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was the wrong move to intentionally walk Shohei Ohtani, and I know that sounds psychotic to me. You always walk Shohei in that situation, but I said you can't afford yourself to be wild against Mookie. You have to give in to Mookie, or else you're going to give up a run because you're going to walk him because you're being selective in the situation. And sure enough, the Phillies got to a 3-1 count with Mookie Betts and then ended up walking him there. I thought that was the biggest mistake of the game. I know everybody's going to point out to the last play of the game, but I thought the Phillies shouldn't walk Shohei in that situation to make it bases loaded. And then eventually, obviously, Mookie drawing the walk to tie the game. I don't know if there were other moments like that, but I felt like that was the moment of the game where I thought the Phillies lost it.
Yeah, that's definitely a moment I'm sure their manager is going to look back on and maybe regret a little bit, because who was pitching at that point? Was it Duran?
John Duran. Who
was Duran?
I thought he was the wrong pitcher to get in there in the situation. I thought, okay, because I thought we had first and third with one out,
mm-hmm.
and you're trying to get the 9-hole hitter out, which I think was Pages at that moment.
Yeah,
and I don't think Duran is a ground ball pitcher. He is a strikeout pitcher.
Yeah,
and if you're gonna try to get 2-for-1 on a I think Rob Thompson thought that was a safe situation more than he thought that was a situation I need to get two outs in. But I say there and I'm like, I don't trust Duran's stuff against, you know, like I need to get two outs and one batter because I'm not trying to get Shohei Ohtani up at the next batter. So I'm trying to go some sinker baller guy or some guy that has the capability of inducing a ground out, not Joan Duran who can just flame ball you and go strikeout. I don't know. I thought bringing in Duran was the wrong move. I thought walking Ohtani was the wrong move. Because if you bring in Durant, if you're going to bring in Durant in that situation, then you just have him face two batters and not walk Ohtani. If he's going to be the guy that is the closer that's going to close this game, he was going to have to get out Ohtani at a certain point anyway. So have him attack Ohtani no matter what. But then he hedges and then he goes and walks the next batter with Mookie. That's why I think it was kind of an in-between situation. Mm-hmm. And I thought that whole inning was a mess from the Philly standpoint.
Yeah, I think they should have taken the context of the series more seriously, mm-hmm. especially with Ohtani struggling. I don't hate the fact that Durant came in because it was such a high leverage situation. I understand the want for your high leverage guy to come in and clean it up.
Yeah.
But also, walking Ohtani was incorrect. He was 0-for-3 up until that point. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, have some feel a little bit.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Mookie, doesn't he have reverse splits?
Mookie
too?
Was 400, batting 400 in this series.
Yeah, he batted 400.
He was seeing the ball well.
He hits better against righties, I'm pretty sure. So, at that point, you kind of got to pick your poison, and I feel like they should have tried to at least. They didn't even pitch to him anyway. They didn't even try to pitch around Ohtani or anything like that. They're just like, go to first.
I would have rather pitched around. At least give the illusion. And Shohei's known to chase a few times.
Yeah.
You know, especially with 101 that's going to be facing you. You know, there's a situation where Duran's fastball is going to look juicy to Shohei. He may chase one or two times in that at bat, and you may get lucky. But I thought the approach was all wrong. I thought it was very analytic driven, you know, all that. BS with it. And I thought the Phillies deserved to lose because they played scared in that game, and scared got them a 1-1 tie and ended up in that extras. And let's be fair, it just can compartmentalize on you. So just didn't think it was the right approach, and the Phillies are now out. And it kind of feels like that's it for Philadelphia in terms of the core of what they have, you know, with Schwarber potentially going away and some other players potentially on the move as well because the money is getting too big. So what a horrible way to feel like you can just totally lose your seat. It kind of reminds me, I don't know how old you were when it reminds me of when the Phillies big core went away the first time. Like, I think it was 2011. Ryan Howard steps out of the batter's box on the final out of the NLDS and he tears his Achilles.
Oh,
he tears his Achilles as the Cardinals are celebrating and winning the NLDS in Game 5, beating the Phillies. And that essentially ended Jimmy Rollins, Chase Utley, and Ryan Howard Phillies core. That was it. And it kind of feels like this is the same kind of gut punch in a way for that Philly core. So, I don't
know. That's wild.
It just sounds horrible. It's just this horrible way to go.
I was 8 years old in 2011.
I don't want a reminder. I don't want. Do you remember the Giants beating him at least?
Yeah, I remember that.
In 2010. Okay, all right. At least that was the last like great Phillies situation in terms of that. But the Dodgers move on, and it feels like with that game, the Dodgers' mojo of the bullpen's back a little bit too. Roky being used the way he's being used now, I am terrified to say. Yes, I think this Dodger team is capable of winning a World Series now. I thought they were not with what they had, but things are lining up the right way, and the bullpen is getting hot in the right time. And this is as good of a situation for them because regardless of what happens tomorrow, that series goes 5 with Milwaukee and Chicago, and the starters are not lined up for those two teams to go up against the Dodgers, who have everything lined up for them. So I thought last night was as good as it could be for Dodger fans last night in regards to it. They feel like they are well on their way to getting to the World Series again, and I hate to say it as someone who knows a lot of people who listen to us are not
for the Dodgers. Yeah, I was kind of banking on Philly kind of beating L.A. because I think they were definitely the strongest team in the NL this past year, even though the Brewers were hot. I feel like I can't really trust the Brewers in the postseason, and they just blew a 2-0 lead to the Cubs too. So I don't feel good about the Cubs or the Brewers beating the Dodgers in the NLCS. I mean, it's baseball. Anything can happen, but the Dodgers definitely have all the momentum going on their side right now. Everything's lined up. Their bullpen has looked great. Sasaki has locked down that closer role, and he's been disgusting so far. So I don't really see a world where LA doesn't go to the World Series. I pray that an AL team like the Mariners or the Blue Jays can do something about, you know, that point in the World Series. Yeah. But, you know, And on the NL, I think it's the Dodgers to lose.
I still have faith in Milwaukee. I don't know. Sometimes you just go into a building and it's a division rival, and you're playing a series against division rival, and you kind of throw out the performance of, well, we've seen him so many times. The Cubs know how to scout us better than anybody. But let's be fair, the Cubs have had a really tough time in Milwaukee when they play there. So we'll see what happens tomorrow. My prediction is I think Milwaukee does get the victory tomorrow. And I just chalk it up to the Cubs know us better than anybody. I don't think the Dodgers really know that Brewers is better than the Cubs do. So I still have faith that the depth of the Brewers and the way their offense is put together feels like one that is capable of beating the Dodgers. But said this in 2018 when the Brewers were playing the Dodgers, feels like that could have been the chance as well. But
that's exactly where I was thinking back to with that.
Yeah, 2018 was so close for that Brewer team in terms of getting the World Series. But thankfully, my Red Sox thwarted those Dodgers in 2018.
There
for
you go.
So,
love seeing Manny Machado maybe fall to that knee.
Maybe a juggernaut AL East team comes in then, and that is the Toronto Blue Jays, who look like – I know the Dodgers look good. I think the Brewers are looking like the best – or excuse me, the Blue Jays look like the best baseball team right now.
Yeah, their offense is firing on all cylinders right now.
Yeah. I still can't stop watching the David Ortiz, Vlad Guerrero. Duh! Yankees lose. I can't stop hearing it.
Yeah.
Can't stop watching it. Tonight, Mariners, Tigers. The Tigers are the favorite tonight, by the way. They're -130. Mariners are +110. I guess what you have going for the Tigers is, well, surely they cannot beat Skubal two times in five games. And that is what is going up against them in terms of it. But the Mariners have had Tarek Skubal's number tonight. And so we'll see how far they can go with it. The Mariners 2-0 all time in winner take all games tonight. Both have been in the ALDS. Last time they won in the certain fashion was 2001 versus Cleveland. The Tigers are 6-5 all time in winner take all games. All six of the wins in those winner-take-all games have come on the road. So that's what's going for you there. Who do you got tonight? Tigers, Mariners?
I feel like I would love to see Seattle win this series just because it's Seattle. And I think this franchise and fan base deserves it more than anyone. But I feel like Skubal is just too good. Uh-huh. I feel like he's going to shut the door on this offense. Maybe we'll see if Polanco can have two more homers than him from this game, but I feel like the Tigers are just, every time you think they're done, they just come back.
I just recall last year when Skubal was given the baseball in a game five where everyone thought, okay, the Tigers are really lined up to beat who they're going to be, which was the Guardians last year in that game five, lined up, making it happen. Tarek Skubal's the guy and it's ready to go. And then Grand Slam, Guardians basically roll on and win, and Skubal gives up the big homer, and the place is going crazy in Cleveland. And that basically essentially ends the season for the Tigers. I don't know if Skubal is completely clutch yet as a postseason pitcher. And that is a thing I'm paying attention to. I recall another left-handed pitcher who has not been clutch in the postseason, who one would consider has been the pitcher of his generation, Clayton Kershaw. So I don't know. If Skubal doesn't deliver tonight, we may be sitting in that situation of, well, the postseason is a different animal, and pitching in the postseason can be something that can cause psychologically you just to be a little bit different on the mound. I look for that tonight. I wonder, I don't hope for it, but I wonder if that is in the psychology of Tarek Skubal tonight and what the Tigers may be facing.
Yeah, it's a winner-take-all game. You got the expectation that you're going to go out and shove. So maybe the pressure might be a little bit too much, just like it was for that Phillies pitcher last night.
Orion Kerkering is a name that Philly fans will never want to hear ever again. Too bad he's on that team for a little bit as a reliever. So, Mariners, Tigers, I believe the pregame is happening right now on 790. So if you want to listen to that game as soon as we wrap up, it's over there for you. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about what's coming up next on the show schedule, and we'll say what we're watching this weekend as well. Stay with us. We wrap up Behind the Bench next on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. All right, welcome back to Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. As we wrap up our Friday and get you on to your weekend, let's do a little bit of the schedule here first before we say what we're watching this weekend. Of course, coming up tonight, Justin Garza taking on Sanger tonight, 6 p.m. or 7 p.m. pregame with a 7:30 kickoff. Myself, Paul Metters, on the call for tonight in Sanger. Tomorrow, Paul Metters will have his show, Central Valley Sports Report, live from 10 a.m. to noon on 1430. Follow him at 4:30. We will have Cubs and Brewers Game 5. 4:30, 5:08 first pitch. Over on 790, we'll have Sharks and Ducks 6:30 pregame with a 7 p.m. Puck drop from there. Sunday, Niners and Bucks will be at 12:25 pregame with a 1:25 kickoff from Tampa Bay. Sunday Night Football on 1430, Lions and Chiefs from Kansas City at 5 p.m. Over on 790, a morning edition of football, Rams and Ravens are going to be at 9 a.m. pregame with a 10 a.m. kickoff from Baltimore. Raiders to follow as they take on the Titans as soon as the Ram game is over. We will have the Raider game for you. Kickoff, I believe, is scheduled for 1:25. And then following that, we will have ALCS Game 1, the Blue Jays facing either the Tigers or the Mariners. That'll be on 790 on Sunday. We'll be back Monday for another edition of our show, 2 hours edition of our show, 3 p.m. to 5. Sportsline Bullet Hour with Tony D, but before that, 2 p.m. to 3. We'll have Monday Night Football. We're doing on 1430 the second game of the Monday Night Football slate, which will be the Bears and the Commanders, I believe. The Bears and the Commanders. I don't have it on my sheet, but I think that's Bears Commanders at 5 p.m. So NLCS, ALCS, all that over on 790 for you as well. All right, let's do a little what are we watching this weekend. I'll start. And what am I watching this weekend in terms of it? It's one of my favorite football games of the year. It's going to be at 12:30. It's going to be Oklahoma, Texas. I can't wait for the Red River rivalry at the Cotton Bowl. These things usually are so crazy, and nobody ever has the right, correct feel for a game like that. So I'm sure it'll be Texas by 20. Can't wait for it tomorrow. Oklahoma, Texas tomorrow. That's what I'll be watching. Sergio, what are you watching this weekend?
I'll definitely be flipping from that to Indiana at Oregon tomorrow, also okay. at 12:30. The fact that this is not Big Noon is a crime. Yeah. Watching Cal Poly face number 4 in the FCS, University of Montana. Going to be locked in on my Niners and definitely watching some playoff baseball too.
Yes. Chloe, what are you watching this weekend?
I was also looking at the Red River rivalry. That's really hard to say.
Red
oh
River
my gosh.
Rivalry.
I will not be saying that again. But that game, really looking forward to. And then, of course, the Niners. And then small shout out, but I do know that, like, inner squads for gymnastics starts pretty soon.
Okay.
So I'm kind of keeping my eye out. They all start in October. So I don't know of any this weekend, but I know they'll be coming the next few weeks. So
how about Michigan at USC? Michigan at USC. I'm interested in that. Ooh. This weekend as well. Little Kansas at Texas Tech. I want to see if that Kansas team can make things happen. I'm going to put Ohio State on upset alert this week as they take on Illinois in Illinois. I'm just going to put them up there.
Whoa.
Little upset alert from Ohio State. I'm going to be watching my Patriots take on that New Orleans Saints team. I'm back. My Patriots are back. We beat the Bills. Clearly, I cannot be hurt by this Patriots team. Surely, I am not in a vulnerable place to be let down for what they are potentially going to do to me this weekend. Also, fantasy vibes are doing great as well. I don't talk about my fantasy team a lot, but 5-0 feels really good. I'm 2 games up on everybody in my league.
Whoa.
In a 12-team league. Everybody's 3-2 or worse, and I'm 5-0. I don't think I've ever seen that before.
Doing way better than me. I'm 1-4 and had to make, like, 3 trades.
Oh, Sergio. Oh, no. Chloe, you're doing great, right?
I'm doing great in my fantasy right now, actually. I want to say I'm 4-1. Watch, I'm going to double-check this real quick. Let's see. 4-1. I'm ranked number 2 okay. in my league.
So, I'm in shambles.
Well, I did tell Phil earlier that it's like 60% my boyfriend and like 40% me. But hey,
team effort.
The vibes.
Exactly. You know, he handles all the trades and I still pay attention. I picked these guys. So
big in the draft. All right, we got a minute left. Score predictions tonight, Fresno State. I'm going to go first. I got 31-10. Fresno State will win. 31-10. Sergio, what do you got?
I was going to say 31-17.
Okay, you're giving Colorado State an extra touchdown
there.
Chloe, what do you got?
I'll go 35-17.
35-17.
All in the same realm.
All right, we're all in the same realm. We all get the vibe, so surely it'll be like 10-0. Can't wait. All right, guys. Appreciate it as always. Great job on the show today, and appreciate y'all for what you do.
Yeah, thank you, man.
We appreciate you. Thank you.
All right, we'll be on 7 o'clock tonight. Friday Night Lights will be there, 7:30. Sanger versus Garza. Be sure to tune in. Till then, we'll see you Monday. Have a great weekend.